Get back to basics with Judaism 101 with Rabbi Michael Katz.
Hi, and a very good afternoon to you. Wonderful to be in your company. Great to be back here and with you today on this glorious, beautiful Wednesday afternoon here in the Highveld. This is Rabbi Michael Katz, and we are on Judaism 101.9. Of course, this is the show where we kind of get back to basics. We look at things that happened around this time over the ages and look at things that perhaps we need to know, perhaps we've forgotten, perhaps we learned at school, and maybe then we didn't, and things that are commonly used in Judaism. You know, today we're going to focus a little bit on some of the words that you hear bandied around, and we use them. We even often use them, and we don't necessarily know their true and proper meaning. And so perhaps we'll spend some time exploring a few of these words of Jewish terminology and what they actually mean. Of course, more in the Torah direction rather than just sayings or or any anecdotal words. But things that you hear often and maybe aren't quite sure exactly what you're talking about or what they mean when you hear them from others. So let's perhaps begin, as we always do, with a little bit of a look back into the past. These days, today is the 15th day of Sivan. It is the middle of the month of Sivan already. Remember that Sivan, the third month after Pesach, after Nisan, we're already a good 2.5 months into the cycle of the months of the year, and therefore creeping as we do ever closer to the Yamim Noraim, the high festivals. Yeah, it's hard to think like that, but we are already probably in the region of about 104, 105 days to Rosh Hashanah. It's quite incredible, and yes, it does run away from you. It goes very quickly. But today, the 15th of Sivan, marks something quite significant in the history of the Jewish people, the history of Jews, and the history, and a biblical history, because today is recorded as the birth date and the day of passing, the Yahrzeit, of Judah, Yehuda, one of the sons of Jacob. He was the fourth son of Yaakov and Leah, of Jacob and Leah. He was born in Haran. He was born on the 15th of Sivan in the year 2196 from creation, which was 1565 before the Common Era. Passed away on the same date, 119 years later, in Egypt, in Mitzrayim. Remember, the sons of Jacob all came down to Egypt to their brother Joseph, who was the viceroy. And of course, it was Yehuda who had to do with it. It was Judah, who took the leadership role in selling Yosef into slavery and in the brothers' later attempts to find him and free him and to protect Benjamin. Remember, he was the one who stepped forward and said, I'll look after this boy, send him with me, because they knew they couldn't come back to Joseph, to Yosef, without the brother Benjamin together with them. On his deathbed, Yaakov conferred the leadership of Israel upon Yehuda, proclaiming, the scepter shall not depart from Yehuda, nor the legislator from between his feet, until Shiloh, until Mashiach comes. The royal house of David, as well as many of the great sages and leaders of Israel throughout the generations of Jewish history, therefore trace their lineage to Yehuda. Yehuda had five sons, Er and Onan, who died without children, recorded in Torah, Shelah, and his twins from Tamar, who were Peretz and Zerach. Their descendants formed the tribe of Yehuda, which was the most populous and the most prestigious of the 12 tribes of Israel. After the death of King Solomon, the people of Israel split actually into two kingdoms. It was 10 tribes that formed the kingdom of Israel in the north, with Shomron, otherwise known as Samaria in today's colloquial terms, as the capital. Only the tribes of Yehuda and Binyamin remained loyal to Solomon's son, Rehavam, and formed the kingdom of Yehuda, of Judea in the south, in the area surrounding the capital, Jerusalem. Eventually, the northern kingdom was conquered by Assyria, and the 10 tribes living there were exiled and became lost to the Jewish people. The inhabitants of Judea were also exiled to Babylon, but subsequently returned to the Holy Land and rebuilt Jerusalem and the Holy Temple. Over time, the terms Judean and Jew, which is where it actually comes from, which originally referred to a member of the tribe of Yehuda, became synonymous with Israelite, which was used to refer to the descendants of all of Jacob's 12 sons, in other words, the Jewish people. If you wanted to know where we came from and what the foundation of being Jewish was really all about, it actually comes from Yehuda, birthday and Yahrzeit on the 15th of Sivan today. Today also marks the date in 1927 of the arrest of the Lubavitcher Rebbe, the 6th Lubavitcher Rebbe, Rabbi Yosef Yitzchok Schneerson. It was shortly after midnight on this day, on the 15th of Sivan, that the Rebbe was arrested by agents of what was known as the GPU, the Soviet Secret Police, and the Yevsektsiya, the Jewish section of the Communist Party, for leading the underground network of rabbis, teachers, and shluchim, emissaries, working to preserve and disseminate Jewish learning and observance throughout the Soviet Empire. So that recorded on this day, the 15th of Sivan. 17th of Sivan marks some even further back notes, and that is number one, that today was the day, 17th of Sivan, which is coming up on Friday, when Noach's Ark, the Ark of Noah, came to rest on Har Ararat. That was in 2105 before the Common Era. It was 7 months after the beginning of the Great Flood, and 17 days after the waters started subsiding, that the ark sheltering Noah, his family, and all the animals came to rest on the still submerged summit of Ararat. It was also the date on which the Chashmonaim had a victory in around 140 before the Common Era, where they recaptured Migdal Tsur from the Greek enemy and proclaimed this day as a holiday according to the Megillah, according to the Talmud Megillat Tainit. Now, the 18th of Sivan, which is going to be on Shabbos, marks a date that is absolutely incredible, and that was from 1492. It had been officially forbidden to practice Judaism in Spain, though this law had been enforced for many years before its official abolishment. So, the Spanish cabinet approved a bill which granted religious freedom to Spain's Jews as well as to other religious minorities. Now, believe it or not, this happened on the 18th of Sivan in 1967. Yeah. The Spanish Inquisition laws were actually in place and there, and it was officially forbidden to practice Judaism in Spain until, you heard it right, 1967. When we think about anti-Semitism around the world rising up and rearing its ugly head all over the world today, think about that until 1967. The Spanish Inquisition's laws were still in place in places like Spain right up until really our lifetime's touching distance not that long ago. If we go forward to the 20th of Sivan, which is going to be on Monday, 16th of June, which is, of course, a local public holiday, it marks the day of a blood libel in France in 1171. Tens of Jewish men and women were burned alive in the French town of Blois, on the infamous accusation that Jews used Christian blood of children in preparation for matzahs for Pesach. And this took place on Chof Sivan, the 20th of Sivan, which went down then in history as a real blot on our history and that of mankind. Again, the strengths and the reach of anti-Semitism in the most terrible way in blood libels. Now, if you have a small business, think about this. Imagine you ran an amazing special offer, and imagine Chai FM's told 125,000 people about it. Imagine we also posted your special offer on our social media platforms and listed you on our website. Imagine you could do all of that on a month-to-month basis. What would it be worth to you? Chai FM has a special stimulus package for small businesses, and you should get in touch to find out more. Email info@chaifm.com or send a text to 2761 895-1019, and we'll call you. 101.9 Chai FM, 101.9 megahertz of building community businesses.
Get back to basics with Judaism 101 with Rabbi Michael Katz.
Hi, and welcome back. Yes, Rabbi Michael Katz here on Judaism 101.9. Great to be with you. As we said right at the outset, at the beginning, today we're going to spend a little bit of time, if you will stay with us, in exploring and thinking about definitions. In other words, words that we use often, that are often bandied around, especially in Jewish circles, and particularly perhaps in Torah circles. And we may be using them incorrectly. We may not actually have a proper definition of what these words actually mean. And I'm going to begin with one that you're going to think is so simple. Mitzvah. What is a mitzvah? Now, I guess you would fall into the majority of people if you said that a mitzvah, immediately what springs to mind is a good deed. Is that an apt definition of a mitzvah? Many people believe that's what a mitzvah is. It's a mitzvah to be kind to your fellow man. It's a mitzvah to look after your neighbor's dog. It is a mitzvah to polish the car for your Zayda. It is a mitzvah to help others. Is that the sum total of what mitzvahs or mitzvot actually are? I think not. Let's delve a little bit into what does the word mitzvah actually mean? Well, the first thing that we've got to know is the word mitzvah comes from the root tziva or tzav, which is at the center of that word, and it means commandment or a command. So there, right up, we have a more apt definition. What a mitzvah actually is, in Torah speak, is a commandment. Now, we know that there were several types of commandments. There were the commandments that were given in the Ten Commandments. There were the commandments that were given throughout the Torah. And we know that we have 613 of these mitzvot, or mitzvahs, or commandments. And they are divided into different categories. There are some mitzvahs, some mitzvot, that are passive. People like to refer to them as negative commandment, but let's rather use the word passive commandments. Commandments, for instance, that say, you're not allowed to steal. Thou shalt not steal. There's no action there, so it's hard to call that a good act or an act of goodness or an act of kindness or doing something that is good, as our previous definition was wont to do. There are many, many mitzvahs, there are many mitzvot, there are many commandments that are these passive commandments. How many of them, in fact? There are 365 of them. 365 passives. You're not allowed to do this, you're not allowed to do that, you're not allowed to do the next thing. And here it kind of gives Judaism a bit of a bad name because there are so many of them, so we start talking about the fact that Judaism is a bit of a negative religion. But let's rather talk about or think about the fact that it is passive. Passive things. So, effectively, if you were to sit in a room and do nothing and have only good, positive thoughts, let's say, for the duration of that period of time, you will have done or you will have had 365 possible mitzvahs. You will not have stolen. You will not have eaten anything non-kosher. You will not have broken Shabbat. You will not have desecrated any of the festivals. And so there will be 365 under your belt, so to speak, just like that, because you haven't done any of them. You hardly did anything. You didn't do anything. You just sat there. So you see how easy it is to do mitzvahs. It is not just a good deed. There was no deed involved there at all. We then come to the active mitzvahs. the mitzvot where something is required for us to actually do. We've got to do something. You need to give charity. You need to go out and be kind to your fellow men. You need to pray. You need to wash your hands in the morning. You need to eat kosher and so on. And you need to make blessings, brachot, before and after you eat, etc., etc., etc. Those are the active mitzvot. We commonly call them positive commandments, positive mitzvahs. The positive ones, in other words, they are active. They're things where you have to motivate, where you've got to do, where you've got to work at doing something. Now, those you could call good deeds. But not all of them, to us, would seem at the outset to be good. What is so good about eating kosher food? What does it mean, good? We would think it's good to be kind to your fellow man. It's good to be a nice person and all of those things. But there are various and many of the mitzvot where there is a deed, but it's not in our minds actually something good. It's much more appropriate to say that we're talking about a commandment, a command, a good command or a positive command or an active action that we need to take. Those are the so-called positive mitzvahs. There are 248 of those. 248 positives, 365 negatives. The total, of course, is 613, and that is the sum total of the mitzvot, or mitzvahs, in the Torah. 613 commands, some of them passive, some of them active. Now, in and amongst those active mitzvahs, and even the passive ones, there are many that we cannot do on a regular basis. If we think about it, there are many that are time-bound. And when we say time-bound, perhaps more calendar-bound. There are all the mitzvahs of Pesach and all the things of Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur and Sukkot and so on. All of those add up to and are part of the 613. And we cannot do them on a regular basis, on a daily basis. There are a whole lot of mitzvahs, positive and negative, or active and passive, that have to do with the temple times, and we don't have that opportunity either. So we're down to not that many actions, active mitzvahs, that can be and need to be done on a regular basis, and let's call it even on a daily basis. But those are the ones that we often do highlight. And those are called positive, active mitzvahs, things that have to be done on a regular basis, daily. And these are the ones that we usually spend time stressing. You often hear your rabbis, I guess, or your teachers talking about those. Those are the active mitzvahs that we can do on a regular basis. But here we have something deeper. And that is that when we delve deeper into the concept of a mitzvah, we see that there is a related word which is tzavta. Tzavta means chibur, or joining together. What is the purpose, perhaps, of a mitzvah? Purpose of a mitzvah is to create a relationship. When the king gives a commandment or an order to his underling, to his subject, a relationship is built. When the person who has received that command performs the instruction, he has pleased the king. He's also rather happy in the fact that he has pleased the king. So the king is happy with him, and he's happy that he was able to do that action. And a relationship has been created. The king says thank you to him, or rewards him. He is happy that he managed to do that, and he goes away chuffed with himself and with the fact that he was the one who was appointed, he was the one who was called upon, and he was the one who was able to carry out that command of the king. A relationship is built. Chibur. The king now is closer to that subject, and the subject is closer to that king. And this, in fact, is the action of the performance of a mitzvah, any mitzvah. And the easy ones are the ones that we regard as negative, because it just means staying away from the stuff that we're supposed to stay away from. The action ones are the ones where we have to muster up a little bit of energy, a little bit of courage, and a little bit of strength and application, and get involved in doing those things. Some of them are easier than others, and some of them come easier to certain people than others. But each one of them, the positives and the negatives, the active and the passive, form a relationship. They bring us closer to God, they bring God closer to us. And this is the tzavta, the chibur, the joining together that we have with these commands or commandments, mitzvahs. They are little events, little things that bring us closer to God Almighty and bring God Almighty closer to us. That is a mitzvah. What about the definitions that we often hear people talking about, which sounds almost like a mitzvah, where we talk about a Mishnah? Mishnah. And perhaps at the same time as we're explaining Mishnah, let's talk about Mishnah and Gemara. Mishnah and Gemara. Now, the word Mishnah comes from the word of learning. Of the word to learn in Hebrew is leshanot or lishnot, which is to learn. We've got the word Mishnah, which is a teaching or a learning or a law. And these are the laws of the Mishnayot, the Mishnah laws, were the laws that were canonized, that were put together, particularly in Babylon and particularly under the guidance of a great sage by the name of Rabbi Judah the Prince, Rabbi Yehuda Anossi, who is often referred to just as Rabbi or Rebbe. Rabbi, by the way, stands for Rosh B'nai Yisrael. He was the leader of the Jewish people at the time. It was under his instruction and his brilliance that the Mishnayot were canonized, they were put together. Remember, they formed part of what was known as the Oral Law. The Oral Law of Judaism, which was given to us at Mount Sinai, given to Moshe Rabbeinu, who handed it over to the whole Jewish people thereafter, was meant to be oral. It was meant to be given in word form and not necessarily written down as the five books of Moses were to be recorded and written down. This was given over orally. It was meant to be there in order to keep it alive. When the first exile of the Jewish people after the destruction of the first temple began, the sages were troubled by the fact that they felt that this oral tradition may become lost. People had been exiled, people had been banished, there were those who were scattered now all over the world, and was there going to be the opportunity for fathers to teach it to their sons, for teachers to teach it to their students? And they felt that it was necessary to take this oral law, canonize it, put it all into a written form, albeit that it's still called part of the oral tradition, the oral law, and they came up with Mishnah and Gemara. Mishnah being the laws, the Gemara, from the word gemar, it completes the completion of that. And that was the commentary and the thoughts and the thought process and sometimes stories and sometimes tangents and sometimes in incredible intuition and application that the sages of old put into the study of that Mishnah and the formation of that Mishnah, how it came about, why they chose certain words in very cryptic form to be in the Mishnah. It's elucidated, it's explained, it's commented upon, and it is broadened in what is known as the Gemara. The Mishnah and the Gemara together and all the commentaries form what we know as Talmud. Talmud, the canonization or the putting together of the Mishnayot. It forms, there are a total of 63 books of Gemara, of Talmud. There are six different sections of Mishnah. Yeah, you say that on the Pesach Seder. Who knows? Six are the Sidrei Mishnah, the tractates or the sections, the Seders, the orders of the Mishnah, which is then divided into various different subsections and tractates. This is Mishnah and Gemara. Well, now, Discam Wellness Clinics for Adults offers convenient and professional care to help you manage your health risks. Whether you're having your regular wellness checks, such as blood pressure or cholesterol, Discam Wellness Clinics offers you a broad range of health screening services, including female health screening with pap smears, family planning, and pregnancy screening. It's fast, it's affordable, and with care. You can find your nearest Discam Wellness Clinic inside Discam Pharmacies. Better health starts here.
Get back to basics with Judaism 101 with Rabbi Michael Katz.
Hi and welcome back. Yes, we've been talking about definitions, certain terms that we hear often and perhaps either aren't sure what they actually mean or perhaps we get the wrong end of the stick as to what they mean. We've spoken about a mitzvah, We've spoken about Mishnah and Gemara. Perhaps let's move on to another word that sounds similar called a mikveh. What is a mikveh? Mikveh. This is a ritual bath. A mikveh is a ritual bath. But it's not only a ritual bath for people, it's also for vessels, for things. Now, we're not talking about ships, we're not talking about that kind of vessels. We're talking about the items that you use in your kitchen cutlery, crockery, etc., has also got to go to a mikveh. So what is a mikveh? In times gone by, the appearance in the Beit HaMikdash, in the temple, could only be done by a person once they had immersed in something called a mikveh. Now, a mikveh was a body of water which has to be connected to and part of and preferably an actual fountain, a spring, a wellspring of water that comes directly from the ground. So it's not just any body of water. It has to be carefully constructed to make sure that it complies with all the rules and regulations about a mikveh and about this purification bath. It's got to contain a certain amount of rainwater, a certain amount of groundwater. It's not allowed to have been stored in any container. And there are many, many rules and regulations about and how that water is channeled into the mikveh and how it is comprised. It's got to have at least what we call 40 sa'as of water. In a human being's mikveh, it's got to have 40 measures, or let's call it 40 liters or 40 gallons of water. Now, when we think about that, we think about the number 40 is a number of purity, of purification. The Jewish people spent 40 years in the desert. It was in order to cleanse them from Egypt. Moses went up the mountain for periods of 40 days and 40 nights. Everything to do with the number 40 has got to do with this idea of cleansing, of purification. And so too, the concept of a mikveh. Now, there are mikvaot, there are mikvahs around town. There are mikvahs that are designed particularly for women, and there are mikvahs that are designed particularly for men. And there are mikvahs that are designed particularly for kalim, for vessels, for items that you use in your kitchen. Now, the three have different applications and implications. Women need to go to the mikveh every month if they are in a state whereby they are married and they are of a youthful age. They need to continually go to the mikveh. Many people think that the going to the mikveh is only something that is done right before you get married, and it's the only time that it has to happen. It's not true. Anybody who has studied it and understands it realizes that it is something that then has to fit in with the cycles of the woman's body, and the mikveh becomes part and parcel of the marriage. A woman needing to go to the mikveh is an obligation. She makes a bracha, she makes a blessing when she immerses in the mikveh for that ritual cleansing. It takes place after she has washed, after she's thoroughly cleaned. So it's not really about cleansing as much as it is a spiritual preparation for what is to follow. So this is the concept of women going to the mikveh. Men go to the mikveh. Predominantly, you'll hear of guys going to the mikveh before Yom Kippur or before a Yom Tov. Many go before a Shabbos. And there are many who go into a mikveh daily. For a man, the rules of the mikveh are a lot less cumbersome in comparison to the women. And men do not make a bracha, they do not make a blessing when they go into this body of water, when they go through this process of cleansing in order to be ready for prayer, in order to be ready for Yom Kippur, etc., etc., etc. What about vessels? What about items within your kitchen? Most items in a kitchen that are not the fixtures need to go to a mikveh before they are used. Why is this? It's because we believe that when that these items may be carrying some kind of a spiritual taint, and that spiritual taint needs to be washed away. It needs to be removed from the item that may have been dedicated to by a manufacturer to his god, or to some kind of an unfortunate idea in his mind at the time of manufacture, that spiritual taint stays there, needs to be washed away by the mikveh. So you have what we call kelim mikvehs, mikvehs for vessels, mikvehs for appliances, for items, and you have then a mikvas noshim, a mikveh for women, and a mikveh for anoshim, for men. Different kinds of mikvehs, but it is the ritual bath, the ritual purification that needs to take place for all of these things. We'll be back with you to sum up right after this.
Get back to basics with Judaism 101 with Rabbi Michael Katz.
Hi and welcome back. Yes, so we've been talking about the definitions of various words. Most of them started with an M today. Mitzvahs, Mishnah, Mikveh. And perhaps we'll continue this kind of discussion in future shows to deal with or to think about words that are often used and aren't clearly known or aren't clearly understood by the frequent use that we make of those words. We'll be back with you same time, same place next week for another episode of Judaism 101.9. In the meantime, I want to wish you a great Shabbat up ahead, a great rest of the week, and I look forward to chatting with you again soon. Take care, look after yourselves, and be well.